Good evening. Good evening, everyone. You can take off your coats. It's called the winter day. Last time I've seen most of you, it was nicer outside. But this is how it goes. This is how it is. Shalom and welcome. Welcome to the first class, first meeting of basic introduction to halacha. I'm very excited, personally, because I feel like having this second mini-series after we done, I think, was a very successful first mini-series, Basic Introduction to Talmud. I'm very excited. Thank you very much, Frilke. Thank you very much. I think I'm very, very excited to start this new one. And I think it's a very important one. I cannot say more important, but I feel it's something. Even the Basic Introduction to Talmud was something that it was very, very nice for us to learn as Jews, to dive into the Talmudic text. I think halacha has something even bigger than that. Thank you very much, Michael. I think that halacha has something even bigger than that in terms of our daily life, what exactly defines us as Jews, what is the halacha for us, and doesn't necessarily have to do things about observance and non-observance, but most of all, what is the impact of this codex, of this Jewish law on our lives? So, on that note, I'll present a little bit of what we will have in this five meetings. Yeah, is there a societary? Right there. I will introduce what we are going to see in those five meetings in this mini-series. Our first class today is going to be an introduction of what exactly is halacha. And in other words, what's the difference between halacha and the mitzvah? That's a question that raised in the last mini-series a lot. And I want to dive into this question because it's a very complicated one. It's not as simple and easy as I tried to answer. And I apologize for that. Last time, we can dedicate almost more than 40 minutes only to this question. And I promise you, it's a fascinating, fascinating question. What's the difference between mitzvah and halacha? On the second meeting, Bezrat Hashem, we will dive into the early textbooks of halacha. We will meet roles and figures, characters like the Rambam, the Tur. What is the Bet Yosef? What is the importance of those characters, of those books on Jewish halacha? What are they exactly? How can we learn them? Where do we learn them? Are they in English, in Hebrew, translation? We'll dive into what exactly are the most important books and figures, characters in Jewish halacha. Third class, Bezrat Hashem, is going to be about the most important figure, the person who changed halacha before it and after him. It's totally, totally different. Is Rabbi Yosef Karo, the one who wrote the Shulchan Aruch. We will talk about what he wrote, what is the Shulchan Aruch, the importance of Shulchan Aruch in Jewish law. And we continue on with more sophisticated stuff. How does a posek halacha decide what the halacha is? How does halacha change? Does it even change at all? That's the question. Does halacha change, or do we try to maintain halacha just like they tried to do it 50 years, 100 and 1,000 of years ago? Maybe halacha doesn't change, or does it is? And if it changes, then how much, or how come? What are the systems that are behind the halacha that makes it to change? And all the way until understanding, I'll try to suggest what is the importance of halacha in our daily, everyday life as Jews. Maybe we can be Jews without halacha. Maybe we can have halacha without Judaism. That's a question I want to raise. I'm not going to answer it now, not even today. But this is my question to you. So on that note, let's dive in into the first class. I don't think I should introduce myself again, right? Just making sure there is anyone who needs another introduction of me.
Are you recording it, though?
What?
Are you recording it?
Yes.
Thank you
for... Oh, okay, for that. Yes, thank you. Okay, so yes, Sidan Rakovsky, rabbinic assistant at Charit Tfila. Thank you, everyone. And an avrech at Beit Midrash Zichron Dov. So on that note, before we dive into what halacha is, I want to hear from you. What's a mitzvah? What's a mitzvah? We're Jews, right? Everyone here is Jewish. What's a mitzvah? Yes.
Mitzvah is a
deed. If you could please say your name loud so all the other people can know exactly how that is, so that would be great.
Yeah. Well, it's a deed, but we are commanded to fulfill 613 deeds.
Okay.
As being a Jew.
Okay, 613, that's a number.
Yeah.
that we all know.
Do you want to give an example?
Can you give an example? For sure.
Well, be nice to your neighbor.
Be nice to your neighbor. Okay, what else? No, you're
give
right.
Charity.
Give charity. Tzedakah. That's right. That's mitzvah. Is it halacha?
No, it's mitzvah.
It's mitzvah.
I think it's a mitzvah.
It's a mitzvah, not halacha.
Be nice to
there's a difference. Mitzvah, halacha? Who says it's halacha? Giving charity, tzedakah, is halacha or mitzvah? What is it?
Well, it depends.
Depends on what?
Well, is it the 10% that you have to give? No, not really.
Okay. It's complicated. Complicated one. What else? That you, everything you said was 100% correct.
Is to give 10% charity.
10%. Maaseh.
And anything over than that is a mitzvah.
Okay, interesting. This is an interesting distinction. Very interesting. I think you're correct. Any other more definitions? What's a mitzvah?
But that's also what you can't do.
What you can't do. Exactly. Exactly. Yesh mitzvot aseh and mitzvot lo taseh. Talk about it in a minute. Yes, Ira.
Now, I asked you this question before, and I thought the 613 in the Chumash are halachic dictates, and you said, no, they are mitzvot. But right. I think of mitzvot as good deeds, and halachic dictates as admonishments, or do this, don't do this.
So I have a question. If I observe Shabbos, I don't drive on Shabbos, for example. I try to not drive on Shabbos. Am I performing a good deed? Can I call myself a moral person now?
That's
halacha or a mitzvah? Okay, Lishmor Shabbat is halacha or a mitzvah? Okay, we just light up Hanukkah candles. Did I perform a mitzvah or is it halacha?
Mitzvah.
It's a mitzvah or halacha? We just said, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu lehadlik ner shel Chanukah. We had a bracha before that. What's brachot? What are blessings? Do I bless, do I say a bracha before I perform a mitzvah or before I perform in halacha? What's the differences? That's a question was, because I see all of you, we have different voices inside of it. It's just because all these voices are being reflected inside the Jewish literature. Because different rabbis actually discuss, first of all, what's a mitzvah? What is a mitzvah? So please see on your source sheet, the most ancient source that we have that even mentions the word mitzvah in Judaism, in Hebrew, is source number one from Devarim. Veshamarta et ha-mitzvah, ve'et ha-chukim, ve'et ha-mishpatim, asher anochim et avcha yom la'asotam. Therefore, observe faithfully the instruction. Mitzvah is translated here as instruction. This is the JPS one, the translation. The laws and the rules with which I charge you today. So what is a mitzvah according to this Devarim?
Instruction.
Instruction.
Right, so yes.
Tzivui, exactly.
It's a command.
It's a commandment.
It's a command, right?
Commandment, mitzvah, instruction, commandment, exactly.
And halakha is the way you do something. It's a halakha.
I think you're getting closer to that. So I think you're getting closer, Terry.
So tikkun olam, and being a good person, and being nice to people, and I don't know about giving tzedakah, because there is a specific, but it's just a general question of how you behave, how you have a conscience. That is more halakha.
Mm-hmm.
A mitzvah keep Shabbat.
Okay, keep that in mind. I think you're getting to that closer. I will change a little bit what you said. I will change a little bit, but I think you're getting closer to that, Terry. So keep that in mind. So can I perform a mitzvah if I'm not Jewish? I'm Christian. Can I perform a mitzvah?
Yeah. You seven mitzvahs.
Seven mitzvot nei noach. Okay, we'll get to that. Okay, thank you. There's seven mitzvot. But if Shabbos is not one of the seven mitzvot nei noach. If I'm a Christian and I want to observe Shabbos, am I performing a mitzvah?
No, you're
not. I'm not performing a mitzvah. No, why? Because it's only the condition if you're commandment to that. So mitzvah is a commandment that we were commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where? Were they written in the Torah? In the Mishnah? In the Talmud? Remember we said there is a Mishnah, there is a Talmud, the Oral Torah. Is the Oral Torah talking about mitzvot or halachot? Is the mitzvot are being mentioned in the Mishnah or only in the Torah? What's the difference? We have mitzvot de'oraisa and mitzvot de'rabanan. We have mitzvot that are from the Torah, and we have mitzvot that are were instructed by our sages. What's the difference? Second thing, what is the importance of the Torah in terms of mitzvot? What is the meaning of Torah? And when I say Torah, I refer to the five books of Moses, not to Nevi'im and Ketuvim, only to the first section of the Tanakh, only to the Torah. What is the importance of the Torah? Is the Torah only a book that is here to teach us and instruct us how should a Jew live? Is it a book of laws?
No.
Or is it something else?
No.
Like it's a way of life.
It's a way of life. So where is the mitzvot in the Torah?
That's not a mitzvah specifically.
That okay.
It's telling you this is how you should behave. You should behave in such a way. You should have a conscience in such a way.
There are many mitzvot in the Torah.
But there are many mitzvot that may not have anything to do with being a nice person.
You know who asked this question? Who's the first one to ask this question? There's a midrash that Rashi quotes, the first Rashi on the Torah. He asks, look please at source number 3. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, in the beginning, Bereshit, Rabbi Yitzchak said, Lo haya tzarich la'tchil et ha-Torah, ela me'achodesh ezelechem. There is a midrash, and Rabbi Yitzchak, this rabbi, he says, we should not have started the Torah, but from the first mitzvah of the Torah. The first mitzvah is, ha-chodesh ezelechem, Rosh Chodesh. This is the first mitzvah in the Torah. Now some would say, wait, purvu? Wait, we know in Parashat Noach, some say that the fact that we write Turvu milu et ha'aretz v'kivshu about the fish, that they're saying on the, maybe it's about, it's very interesting, but no, in this midrash, he says we should have started the Torah with the first mitzvah. Why? What is the basic assumption? His basic assumption of Rabbi Yitzchak is that the Torah is only a list of commandments. We don't need all the stories of our forefathers about the flood and Noach and Abraham and the creation. So why do we need all of that? So there is an answer about Eretz Yisrael and the importance of Eretz Yisrael. I'm not going to dive into it now. But yes, in the rabbinical literature, there are opinions that say, first of all, the Torah is the book of laws. First of all, we have the Torah because we need to know how to perform our daily life. What should we do? What should we not do? For example, what is a kosher animal? And now we have another question. If I observe kosher, all I do is not eat pork. Is that a mitzvah? Did I perform a mitzvah?
No.
No? Why not? What's the difference between that and lighting up Hanukkah candles? Why not? I'm not doing anything. I'm just not eating pork. That's all I'm doing. I'm not doing. Am I performing a mitzvah by not doing something? Or should I act positively, actively on something and do it in my 10 fingers? In order to perform the mitzvah. Or maybe by not doing something, I perform a mitzvah as well. It's written in the Torah, right? The Torah says don't eat pork, don't eat pigs. So maybe that's fine. And I'm performing a mitzvah in that. Shabbos, for example, right? Shabbos has positive mitzvot and negative ones. And I don't say negative, but passive ones. Active mitzvot and passive mitzvot, right? So how can we make an order in all this? First of all, we need to understand one thing. We said, right, as you said before, the magic number of 613 mitzvot that are in the Torah. How do we know there's 613? Who said that? Pomegranate. You had someone open the pomegranate, count it, and said, let's think of a meaning to this number. Let it be 613 like the mitzvot. Okay, might be. Just that every pomegranate that someone opened and actually counted the seeds, there were much less or more than 613.
It's our organs and
Ramach v'shasa. Okay, that's right. This source, that's you're very right, Barry. But for your surprise, counting the mitzvot or defining what's a mitzvah, the first place that we have it is not in Safrut Chazal. We don't find, first of all, we don't find it in the Torah. The Torah doesn't define what a mitzvah is, which is very very weird. If the Torah is a list of mitzvot that each of us as Jews should perform, why does the Torah not explain what the mitzvah is? I would have imagined in Sefer Devarim, Deuteronomy, there would be Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Emor le'am Yisrael, ze ha-mitzvot asher alecha alechem la'asot kacha. Why don't we don't explain what the mitzvah is? Second question that I have, why does the Torah doesn't say how many mitzvot there are? Or maybe it's not very important to know how many mitzvot there are. Just perform a mitzvah. It doesn't really matter what. Okay? So the first source that says exactly how many mitzvot there are and what is a mitzvah is not in the Torah, it's not in the prophets or in the writings, not in Nevi'im and Ketuvim, and it's not also in the Mishnah. The first place that we see it is in the Talmud. All right, the Talmud is the first place that actually explains what a mitzvah is and how many there are. First of all, what can we understand? Before we read this part from the Talmud, we need to understand that the concept of mitzvot is a late concept. For thousands of years, Jews managed themselves without the concept of a mitzvah. How come? Why? We talked about it a little bit in the last series. We said that something happened during the Second Temple. We lost prophecy and we started to become a rabbinic nation. From moving from prophets to rabbis, from spiritual, unconditional connection to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, to start and asking halachic questions and discussions, how should one perform? In that case, in this era, in this period of time, in this context, the world of mitzvot and halachot started to rise a little bit. And now people had to explain, so what defines us as Jews? How are we different than Christians or Muslims back then in the Middle Ages? I mean, the Muslims have their Sharia. The Sharia of the Muslims is their book of laws, what they can do and what they cannot do. For example, they cannot drink what?
Alcohol,
right? They have this kind of kashrut thing. They cannot eat also what? Pork, right? So for them, it's a mitzvah. They define themselves earlier than we defined ourselves, all right? So we need to understand, first of all, one thing. The concept of mitzvot, I'm not talking about halachot. Because halachot, we had the Mishnah before. But the concept of mitzvot is a late concept, only dated back to the Talmud. For thousands of years, Jews managed themselves for some reason without saying this is a mitzvah, this is not a mitzvah. People usually don't understand that. The first place that we see the mitzvah is in source number 4. It's a very important source. In Masechet Makot, that's a tractate from the Gemara. Darash Rabbi Shamlai, this rabbi, which is very interesting who he is, because he's not so popular throughout the Shas, he said something that every Jew afterwards learns in kindergarten. So important what he said. 613 mitzvot, 613 mitzvot stated to Moses in the Torah, consisting of 365 prohibitions, and corresponding to the number of days in the solar system, 365, depends, again, February has 29 or not, and 248 positive mitzvot corresponding to what? To the number of persons, like you said, Barry, limbs. All right? This is the first source that one rabbi called Rav Shemlai, which, again, who is he and why did he say that and why do we need that? That's the first place someone, a Jew, decided to count how many mitzvot there are in the Torah. But it was very easy what he did, because he just said a number with no description, no explanation. How did you come to this number? What is a mitzvah and what is not a mitzvah? The Torah is filled with commandments. We know that. Commandments are everywhere in the Torah. What commandment do you count as a mitzvah and what commandment don't you count as a mitzvah? How did he get to this number? And the generations after the Talmud struggled so much with this question. So much. What is a mitzvah? What is not a mitzvah? And this drasha that he had about 248 positive and 365 a negative mitzvot. First of all, that was the first time we had this distinction between positive mitzvot and negative mitzvot, because we didn't have the concept of mitzvah before. We had the source in Devarim, but again, it was an instruction. All the rules and instructions that us as Jews have, you should observe it. But saying, first of all, there's 613 mitzvot. Almost half of them are positive. Almost half of them are passive. This is a new concept. And the rabbis in the past generations afterwards, they struggled with this question, trying to understand what is a mitzvah, what is a positive mitzvah, what is a negative mitzvah, and what are the practical consequences that this discussion had. Why do we need to know how many mitzvot there are there? Well, what's in Talmudic way, we will ask, what is the nafka mina? What is the difference before I knew it and after I knew it? Okay, there's 613. What will change in myself when I wake up in the next morning and I'll say, oh, there's 613 mitzvot? What's the difference? Yes.
I'm just looking at the arithmetic here. There's a 611 mitzvot plus the first two of the 10 commandments for 613.
Right.
So the other 8 commandments are part of the 613.
Yes, in total 613.
Including the 10 commandments.
Yes, including 613.
The reason why the Ten Commandments have the prominence they have
in okay.
The other 603.
I actually surprised that this question was not raised so far. So what are the Ten Commandments? Are there the Ten Mitzvot? What is commandment? Aseret in Hebrew, it's not Aseret HaMitzvot, it's Aseret HaDibrot, right? Why did not call the Seret HaMitzvot? Again, because the concept of mitzvah is new. Okay? The word dibrot, commandments. Again, the commandments in there's other words for that in English for a Seret HaDibrot? Sayings. I mean, but we say commandments. But commandment is not a diber in Hebrew. Commandment is a mitzvah. It's an instruction. It's a tzivui. Dibrot are sayings.
Things
in general, rules that can be general laws. It's not a mitzvah. When the Torah says, "Kabed et avicha ve'et imecha," you should respect your father and mother, "Lema'an yarichun yamecha," for you will last on this land for many, many years. This was given not in the context of mitzvot. We need to understand that. It was given in the context of sayings, of dibrot. And it's very difficult for us to understand what could it be if it's not a mitzvah. So what's the consequence of saying this is not a mitzvah? Yes, sir. It's a basis for
these Ten Commandments, and I'm using the term that we all recognize. These Ten Commandments is a basis for how to live your life and how to have a society and how to live in a society, because basically all of those things are in any decent society.
I hear, but when the Torah says respect your mom and dad,
yeah,
what does it mean? Okay, what should I do? I really want to respect my mom and dad. What should I do? I mean, the Torah said, respect your mom and dad. Good. This is very moral. This is very, very nice. Every kid will claim that he respects his mom so much. Right? So much. No one respects his mom more than him. But okay, and what are you doing to respect your mother? Do you wash the dishes? I mean, the Torah did not say, you should wash the dishes off your... Right? Do you go shopping? Grocery shop? What do you do to respect your parents? The Torah only said, do it. It's not a commandment. Commandment is something that, you know, I was a soldier and a commander and an officer in the army for 4 years. I know what commandments are. Believe me. I had commandment that people instructed me, and I instructed others as well. All right? And I know that the first law in instructing a commandment is, first of all, that the one who's being instructed, he needs to understand what exactly he needs to do. If he needs to go there and buy this or go there and do that, I should be as explicit as possible. The Torah is very mysterious. How can we say this is a commandment if it only said, "Anochi Hashem Elokecha," the first one, "Lo yelecha Elokim acherim al panai." I'm your God. You should not have any other God besides me. Okay, good. And how someone has another God? What's a God? What is it? Is it? I don't know. Some would say that democracy is the newest religion in the world. That people are so, you know, frum in their democracy, and this is the religion. Am I having a new God if I'm so much in favor of democracy? Is it what?
Or money?
Money? We're in Canada. We're not in the States, so we can say that. That's right. That's right. Here, no one worships money, but that's right. I mean, on the dollar, it says "In God We Trust," right? So maybe, who the God is? That's a question. I'm just saying that we need to understand again that the mitzvot is something new. Halacha is earlier than mitzvot. Mitzvah is a new concept that defines us as a culture, as a society. What is Judaism? Judaism is a group of people, Jews are a group of people who try to perform as many mitzvot as possible. This is Jews. But this is a new definition of what Judaism is. It's not the original definition. Now, why do we have 613? We'll see in a minute how do we get that and whether people agreed with that or not. There are different aspects of exactly those 613, and I'll give an example. But before we understand what halacha is, we need to divide the term, that definition of halacha, this concept of halacha, from a mitzvah. We should not, and this is my purpose today, for us to separate in our minds between a mitzvah and a halacha. It's not the same thing. Halacha is our everyday, what should we do, how should we do it, how much should we do it, when should we do it, and what should we not do, how much should we not do it, and when should we not do it. For example, I'll give an example. There is a mitzvah to kabed et avicha ve'et imecha, respect your mom and dad. What is the halacha to respect your mom and dad, for example? Who knows? You're all parents. What's the halacha? Exactly. Or for example, don't sit on your father's chair. There's a halacha. The Shulchan Aruch says, don't sit on your father's chair. This is not, is that a mitzvah? If I don't sit on my father's chair, did I perform a mitzvah? Maybe, maybe not. We don't know, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's halacha. If I perform in halacha, did I perform a mitzvah? Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe, why not? If I'm a not Jew, I'm a non-Jew, and I want to perform a mitzvah, can I do it?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Of course I can.
Except for Shabbat.
No. Okay. Maybe. What? Okay, why do you get credit or not for this mitzvah? That's the question. What is credit on a mitzvah? We get credit on halachot. Do we get credit for a mitzvah? First of all, yes. Gentiles can get credit on mitzvah that they're doing. Yes, we know that. For example, we have a term which is not only a very moral and nice cultural term, it also has halachic consequences, called Chasid Umot Olam. Chasid Umot Olam is, in English, please help me, the world righteous Gentile. For example, those Gentiles who rescued Jews during the Holocaust, did they perform a mitzvah? 100% yes. 100%. Are they commanded to perform this mitzvah? We know that in the seven mitzvot of Bnei Noach, there is Lot Yitzach. Don't kill others. Did they perform the mitzvah of not killing by the fact they rescued Jews? I believe there are some rabbis who will find this plunder together and will say yes, they performed don't murder by the fact they rescued Jews. But it's more than that. Mitzvah has something to do with moral human sense. Halacha, not necessarily. Mitzvot we can understand. Halacha, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we don't. We need to understand that mitzvah is one section of our Judaism, and it defines us in general. Who are we? And what should we do in the world? And halacha is much wider, bigger, and complicated than that. I'm not asking what the mitzvah is. I'm asking what the halacha is. If I need to know what should I do on Shabbos, how should I put my food on my hot plate on Shabbos, I'm not opening the mitzvah book. There is a mitzvah book. We'll get it in a minute. There is a mitzvah book. I'm opening the Shulchan Aruch. I'm opening the halacha book. I need to know practical what should I do. And if I put the food correctly on the hot plate, I did not perform a mitzvah. I did not perform a mitzvah. I observed halacha. There's a difference between performing a mitzvah and observing halacha. Are we all good on that point?
Yes.
Beautiful. Now, yes. Yes, 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 I have. I owe you a question.
You raised the issue of divorce.
Where's my... Wawa?
You raised the issue of divorce.
Right.
So now you have divorce versus mitzvah versus halacha, right? Unless the divorce is part of the mitzvah. How do you...
The broad or not... Okay.
Very
what's the difference between a constitution and the book of laws? What's the difference? For example, the father of the current prime minister, he established his constitution of Canada, right? That's what someone told me. Why did he have to do that? Canada had the book of laws. Why do we need a constitution? Think of a Aseret that the broad is a Jewish constitution. For example, yes, it is very important for us in our cultural way, in sometimes interpreting what the law is, or what is good and what is bad. But does a judge, when he sits on his throne in court, would he open the constitution to say if you're guilty or not? No. No. He uses his book of laws because he knows if you're guilty or you're not, according to the halacha. Think of, again, the Aseret HaDibrot is a constitution. All right? Again, not the Aseret HaMitzvot, the Aseret HaDibrot. It's a little bit different than that. Now, the first one who wrote down a book of what are exactly those 613 mitzvot, he said, wait. Could it be that this rabbi just said this number without opening the Torah? And he said, okay, let's go through all the Torah and find one after the other mitzvah until I get to 613. And guess what? He started to do so and he found out?
611.
No, more than that. Way more than that. All right, the question, what is a mitzvah and what is not? For example, pruvu, is that a mitzvah? We should expand ourselves. We should give children, give birth. Is that a mitzvah?
That's a blessing.
Only if you're a boy and a girl.
What?
Only if you're a boy and a girl.
Only if you're a boy and a girl. Okay. That's good. That's a halachic question. Did you perform the halacha if you have only girls without boys or boys without girls? We know the mitzvah is to have both. Yes.
Not limited to Jews only.
You're right, Baruch. You're right. Not limited to Jews only.
There's a difference there.
What?
That's a big difference.
That's a big difference. We have a lachot that, first of all, we know that the entire book of Bereshit, or half of it, is not necessarily about Jews. We don't have the concept. First of all, the concept of Jews is very, very late. By Cheney. All right? Very, very, very late. All right? Again, Jesus around O, 0, C or BC, I don't know how you call that, the year of 0. But defining ourselves, we had Ishmaelim. We know it from last week, Parshat Shavua, that they sold Joseph to the Ishmaelim. We have different nations, but we don't have the concept of religion. Judaism is a religion. Again, the world Jew, Jewish from the word Judah. Yehuda. Yehuda is very late. Yehuda is the son of Yaakov. And again, it's not after Yehuda, the son of Yaakov, but it's after the kingdom of Judea, Mamlechet Yehuda, which is much, much later. Much later. All right, when we split in Melachim, in Kings, we split between the kingdom of Yehuda and the kingdom of Israel. Much later. So the concept of Judaism is very late. So when I'm saying, how do we know what is a mitzvah and what is not? We need to ask ourselves if this thing that is written now in the Torah, is it mentioned only for, what you said, only for Bnei Israel, the Israelites, or is it mentioned for more other people? The first one who did it was called Rabbi Saadia Gaon. It was another person, Rabbi Yehuda Gaon. And there is a machloket who did it first. Some say Rabbi Yehuda Gaon, but some say he did not did it in total. But those Geonim, if you remember, I shared a timeline in the last series. The Geonim is the period, the era that is after what? After the Talmud. There were Amoraim in the Talmud, the rabbis of the Talmud called the Amoraim, and the Rashi Yeshivot, those rabbis after them, still in Babylon, were called the Geonim, the genius, the very, very strong and wise people. And they had questions on the Gemara. For example, what is the 613 that this rabbi said? And those rabbis, Rav Saadia Gaon and Rav Yehuda Gaon, they went through the Torah and tried to count the mitzvot. Their book is not so much, was not published so much, and not a lot of people known it. The first one afterwards who did it, his name is Baal Halachot Hagdolot. The owner of the big halacha. That's his name. Again, at the end of the Geonim, he write a book. We don't know who the author is. We don't know. It's interesting because it will come again when I'll talk about Sefer HaChinuch. It's very interesting that someone wrote it anonymously around after the Talmud era. We still don't know who he is. There's some assumption who wrote it, but we don't know exactly who wrote it. And he quoted the 613 mitzvot that he thought are from the Torah. He went one by one and thought how they are. And people accepted it. People said, oh good, we have a book. We said, what are the mitzvot? If we have a question about a mitzvah and why should we perform it, let's open it and we'll see. We still have that book today. But something happened. A couple generations afterwards, I'm going with you to the 12th century. There was a rabbi called Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi. A huge, tremendous scholar, Jewish scholar, who wrote a commentary on the entire Shas. Torah Talmud. It was right on the break point between the Geonim and the Rishonim. The Rishonim is the era afterwards.
Are these two Sephardim?
Yes, Sephardim. Yes, the Rif Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi is Sephardic. What happened between? What happened to the nation in Babylon? So it came to Spain. Just as a short explanation, a cultural and historical context. So there is a story. I don't know if that's real or not. That. What happened is that after the Geonim and when the majority of Judaism, the Jewish mass set in Babylon, all before that, because of the exile and the Talmud, they sat there for 100 of years. There were four Jews who were kidnapped and they moved. They were taken all the way to Spain to serve as servants, as servants to a very rich person. They served there for decades, and afterwards they were released, and they opened some yeshivot. They were very smart scholars from Babylon. They opened their yeshivot in Spain, and people started. They started to learn to teach other people. They started to expand. They died. Their children came afterwards, and they started to expand those yeshivot in Spain. Now, they brought their wisdom, their chokhmah, from Babylon all the way to Europe. And then in Babylon, there were other stuff. There were fights between the kings and this kingdom. There were a lot of problems to the Jews. Jews started to expand from Babylon all the way west to Europe, specifically in Spain and North Africa. All right? This is what happened. And they started to expand not only to Spain. They moved to Spain, for example, to France, to Italy. Italy, France, all west Europe. Italy, France, Portugal. Spain, for example, North Africa, we have in Tunisia, we had in Lube, we had in Egypt. Egypt had a huge, huge community back then. And we're talking about the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th century. All right? This something happened. And this era, specifically the first period of the 11th, 10th, 11th, and 12th century in Spain, is called in Hebrew, Tor HaZahav, the golden age of Spanish Jewry. It was a tremendous time where there was a Muslim regime on Spain. There were a lot of wars between them and the Christians upon Europe. All right, they came from Gibraltar and from Turkey. There's a lot of stuff going on between them and the Christians, and they led the people, the Jews, to settle in. There was not a lot of problems. And what happened is that the Jews they prospered when they lived there. They had their autonomy. They had your time to sit down and learn, and not only learn Torah. We know that the rabbis from back then in this age, this era of the golden era of Spanish Jewry, they worked, and their profession was not only about rabbinical stuff. They were scientists. For example, the Rambam. The Rambam, the huge Maimonides, he was a doctor. He was a physician. All right? He was a physician, the physician of the king. Earlier than him, a rabbi called Ibn Ezra, if you've heard of him. Ibn Ezra is a huge, tremendous scholar. He wrote an entire commentary on the Nevi'im and Ketuvim, for example. He was an astronomist. There is, until now, NASA called a place on the moon that he discovered called the Ibn Ezra. I don't know if they even know that he was a rabbi and the importance that he has on Jewish literature. For example, they were tremendous scholars under the Muslim regime, and they prospered. And they said, okay, wait, now that we have time, we have our people, let's try to make order in what happened in those decades between, in centuries almost, between the Mishnah, Talmud, and what they had in their time. And the first one who did it called the Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi. He was a tremendous Jew. He sat down and wrote several books in philosophy, in science. He was a he worked at math, mathematician. And he wrote down a book that summing up what halacha and mitzvot are. But his book did not work very well. Not a lot of people read it. Not a lot of people. Well, one person did read it. And his name was the Rambam, the Maimonides. The Maimonides, which we'll talk about in a very description, and I will expand everything that we can talk about him next week, Bezrat Hashem. The Rambam, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, the Maimonides, if we call him, and he's very known outside the Jewish community. He sat down and he read not only the Rasag, the Rabbi, not only the Rif, the Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi book, but he read also the book of the Baal Halachot Gdolot, the one two and 300 years before him, that we said the big halachic owner, that we don't know who the owner is. And he sat down, read it, and he was so disappointed, so disappointed. The Rambam has a very special character. When he was alive and he wrote his books, we'll talk about it next week, people burned his books. They did not want to read the Rambam because he read Aristotle and Plato and Greek philosophy, and he tried to combine it into his halachot. He was a big reform back then. And if you can read, please. I gave on source number 5, in his introduction to the book that is called, as simple as it is, Sefer HaMitzvot. The mitzvahs book, all right? He writes in the introduction what happened, why did he decide to write, to sit down and write what he thinks are the 613 mitzvot. And in source number 5, he says, I was disturbed by a root issue that has been on my mind for many years. I have to tell you that in the Hebrew one, which is a translation from Arabic, because he wrote it in Arabic, the Hebrew one is even more harsh than the English one. And that is that those that I have listed, the commandments, those that have listed the commandments have confused many matters, such as I cannot even recount the greatness of their disgrace. Or in Hebrew, takfanitzar shekvar nitzarti bo shanim, vehu sheminyan mitzvot vadimu be'atzmam, vadimu be'inyanim shelo uchal letaer etzem zchutam. Their disgrace is so great. How could they even say this thing is a mitzvah and the other thing is not a mitzvah? Look how he writes on the Baal HaLachot Gdolot, on this Bahag. And he continues and says, for all who begin to list them or to write a book that speaks about this intent are all drawn after the words of the author of the Halachot Gdolot, this Behag. He mentions him by the name. And they all only differed from his approach a tiny bit in their counts as if they were all frozen in front of this man's word. This is the words of the Rambam. Look how he disagreed with this Baal Halachot Gdolot. Now, again, the context. It doesn't really matter what are the 613. Okay, you think different. Why did it so bother the Rambam? What are the 613 mitzvot? I'll give you an answer. Because the moment we had the concept of mitzvah, it ruled like that on Jewish world. The concept of a mitzvah is the genius concept. It's a genius concept that not any other religion in the world have. There's no mitzvot in other religions. None as we have in Judaism. Saying to someone, if you do that, you're a righteous person, that's an amazing way to attempt people of doing stuff. It's an amazing way of convincing people to do something that you want them to do. And it really, really worked. Saying, if you do it, you're righteous. If you don't do it, you're wicked. It's very simple. No, really, it's really simple. But halacha is not black and white. Mitzvot can be black and white. Halacha is not black and white. So the Rambam saw that, and the Rambam said, wait, so if people are doing it very, very, very much and they want to perform mitzvot, let's try to understand what's a mitzvah and what's not. And this book, Baal HaLachot Gedolot, is terrible. Don't read it. I'll give you my counting of what is a mitzvah and what is not. And he wrote, sat down and wrote one of his earliest books called Sefer HaMitzvot. This was the earliest edition that afterwards he decided to sit down and write what would be the greatest halachic book of all times, the Mishneh Torah, his book about halacha. We'll talk about it next week. But for example, let's open it and I'll read what the Rambam says is the first mitzvah in the Torah. How would you decide what the first one is? And he says, and you have it on source number 6, oh, he divided the mitzvot, for example, which the Bahag didn't do. He divided it into aseh and lotas, like the Gemara did. All right? He divided it into positive mitzvot and passive mitzvot. Passive mitzvot are mitzvot that if you don't do something, you still gain a mitzvah. All right? And he says, the first mitzvah is, you know what? I'll read it from the source sheet. You can see the book afterwards right here. He says, the first mitzvah, Aleph Aleph, that is the commandment that he, in source number 6, that is the commandment that he commanded us to believe in God, and that is that we believe that there is an origin and cause, that there is an origin and cause, power of all that exists, and the source of the command is his saying, I am the Lord your God, and at the end of the Gemara, Makot, he said 613, and he gives them a halach of the Gemara. The first mitzvah according to the Rambam is, believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Believe in God. This is the first mitzvah.
The first of the Ten Commandments.
The first of the Ten Commandments, exactly. Now, why would the Rambam count this, first of all, as a mitzvah? Second of all, how is it a mitzvah? How can I perform this as a mitzvah? I want to know. What are the halachot? I want to perform the mitzvah. Break it down to different halachot. Practical aspects, practical deeds. So I know what I can do. And third of all, why did you decide this is number one? Why not something else? Why this is number one? So a lot of rabbis afterwards, all the way until today, we try to understand what led the Rambam to this order that he decided what is the first mitzvah, what is the last mitzvah. I also give the first mitzvah that he did in the negative, in the passive ones. Look at source number 7. What is the first negative mitzvah that the Rambam says? Negative commandments. That is that he prohibited us from believing in a God besides him. Okay, thank you. So you see what he did? He took a positive mitzvah, an active one, which is believe in God, and the other side of the coin would be, don't believe in anyone else. So, can I perform two mitzvot at once? If I believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and no one else, did I perform one mitzvot or two mitzvot? That's a question that people arise on this Rambam. People had a lot. He said, wait, no way, don't read the Bahag. The Bahag is terrible. But he did a lot of stuff that were very difficult. I mean, why did you decide that this is a mitzvah and this is a negative mitzvah? What's the difference? What's the consequences? What are the difference between doing that or doing the other thing? And around 150 years afterwards, there was a book, and again, we don't know who wrote it. There are different assumptions, but it's an historical book that people learn it at schools until today, and we don't know who wrote it. It's called Sefer HaChinuch, the education book, in a free translation. Sefer HaChinuch, the education book. This book...
The book of education.
The book of education, thank you. The book of education. Or... Here the translation is the book of mitzvah education. All right, they added the word mitzvah, which there is no word mitzvah. This book, and it says in the introduction, was written by someone to his son. He just wrote a book to his son because he wanted his son to learn Torah and to know what mitzvah to perform. He was very young. He saw there is no actually a good book because he had some differences with the Rambam. The Rambam was very philosophical. He was very believing God. It was very difficult for a young child to understand. And he wanted to write a book to his young child to explain what's a mitzvah and how to perform in the world. And he decided to do something tremendous. He said, I am going to put all the mitzvah that I find in the Torah in the order of the Torah, which means the first mitzvah that I encounter, I start from Bereshit. I run all the way. I find the mitzvah, I write it down. I go there, I find the mitzvah, I write it down. He was the first one who said, I'm going to do it in the order of the Torah. And he did more than that. He explained the root of the mitzvah. He tried to explain. Some people disagreed with him. But he tried to explain, in his opinion, why is this thing a mitzvah? What is the importance of this action in Jewish life? What is the moral aspect of this mitzvah? And there are 613 mitzvot in this, according to the way the book is. And I gave you the first one that he says. We saw the first one the Rambam said was, believe in God. But the first mitzvah that the Sefer HaChinuch in source number 8 mentions, the commandment of procreation. approval. This is the first commandment according to Sefer Chinuch. Parshat Bereshit has one positive commandment, and that is the commandment of procreation, as it stated, and God blessed them and told them to pruvu umilu et haaretz vekivshua, and procreate. This is according to Sefer Chinuch, the first mitzvah of the Torah. And those two books, he mentions the Rambam. We know there is connection between this book and that book. One second. We know there is connection. This book was a tremendous book in Jewish history, and those two books, all the way until today, are the most read and taught and learned books about what is a mitzvah and what is not a mitzvah, and what are the 613 mitzvot that a Jew has to perform in his life. Now, not everyone agreed there was 613. Yes?
Well, it says this is a blessing. God is blessing the people of Israel. It doesn't say it's not a tzivui, it's not a tzivaut. Okay? So how do you reconcile the two?
Exactly, Sefer Chinuch will explain. Exactly.
He explains that.
Definitely he explains that.
Okay, so what does it say?
We can read it later. We can open Sefer Chinuch and learn it by there, but we need to continue a little bit. But yes, he explained that. That was special. What he did, he explained why he chose this as a mitzvah. Okay. What the Rambam does not do.
As far as I can read it.
What? No, it's in English. It's an English translation. Not everyone agreed with the 613 mitzvot, yes? Okay. Okay, but what about us? Good. What about us? Should we do it or not? Good. That's one thing that people said, no, maybe that's not a mitzvah. Maybe Purva is not a mitzvah. There are people who say it's not. For example, and we have it in our source sheet, someone who was earlier, when I just mentioned him, the great one who has the name of him, named some part of the moon is named after him, the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra was before the Rambam, and he is already before the Rambam in the Sefer HaChinuch wrote their Sefer, their books. He said something very interesting. He said that the truth is, in source number 9, that the number of mitzvot is infinite. As it says in Tehillim, there is a pasuk, I have seen that all things have their limit, but your commandment is broad beyond measure, he says. There is no one, don't say 613, there is much more. And if we count only the general rules that are behind the mitzvot, let's say we do that, they are not going to be even one-tenth of the 613. But Ibn Ezra said, Don't try to give us an exact number of what is a mitzvah and what is not. I think that underneath what he said lies kind of, I won't say that he's scared, but I think that he understands that if we say something is a mitzvah and something is not a mitzvah, we're really going to limit our Jewish world into a book that says this is 613 things that the Jews should do, should perform, no more, no less. And it's not that easy to say that Judaism is limited to 613 mitzvot, and that's all. But I want to, before we finish, try to explain how do we get from this point to what halacha is. I don't know if I answered your answer, if I answered your question, what is the difference between mitzvah and halacha? I'm not sure. But we all know what mitzvah is now, right?
No,
that's good. Not so much. Ira, you have a question?
No,
you don't have a question. Okay. You can come afterwards if we need to sharp another point. It's an important one. Again, the days are the days of the Middle Age. Okay, the Middle Ages. We're talking about the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th centuries. We talked about those four Jews who were kidnapped from Babylon all the way to Spain, and the Jewish world started to thrive in Spain and France and all Western Europe and North Africa, and in Egypt as well. We talked about the roles. There were figures such as the Rambam, Rashi, and stuff like that. What happened in their era that defined what halacha is? Because until then, we had the Mishnah. And I'm doing a little bit of a refresh of our knowledge. The Mishnah was the oral Torah that was written down. Things that were passed from generations to generations, from parents to their children, was eventually written down because Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said, everyone, there's disputes and disagreements. No one remembers what the halacha is. There's different traditions. Let's write one book that sums everything that a Jew should do. The Mishnah is a book of halacha. Okay? But it's not a regular classic book of halacha. It's a book of halacha that has different opinions inside of it. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi decided to maintain, and we talked about it in the first meeting in the previous series, he wanted to preserve the differences and the disagreements on halacha inside the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, we can find Rabbi X said that, Rabbi Y said that, Rabbi Z says that, and people did not know what the halacha is. So, we had the Talmud, and the Talmud said, okay, let's discuss and explain it. But the Talmud It's just discussions on discussions on discussions. If you want to know what the halacha, you will not find it in the Talmud. So we had the Geonim. And the Geonim said, wait, let's try to understand what the Talmud really means. But they did not write a book that sums up all the halachot from it. We had the Baal Halachot Gdolot. He was the first one who did it and counted the 613. He did not only count it, he also write down halachot. But he did not, he just quoted parts from the Talmud and tried to explain it. So people in Europe, in decades, centuries after the Talmud and the Mishnah, they still did not know what to do. There was no answer to this problem, situation that happened that Rabbi Udanasi said, I want to find a solution for. For centuries, people didn't know what the halacha is. They knew some stuff. Everyone knew that an esrog is exactly the fruit that we're taking on Sukkos. No one said, let's take an orange. And everyone knew that tefillin would be black. But there's still a lot of questions that people did not know, not only about those festival laws, also about how should we work at the temple, for example. What is a sacrifice? How should we work with a sacrifice? What is a fast? What are festivals? What is Shabbos? What is... There were a lot of questions that people did not know. And then came the Rambam, the Maimonides, and he said, we cannot let it stay like that. I need to sit down and not write a Mishnah, not write a Talmud, but I need to write down a list. A, B, C, D, E, F, G of the bottom line of the halachot. He said, I will sit down and do it. He was the first one who said, I will do it not only for the everyday things, I will do it for all what the Mishnah discusses. If the Mishnah discusses about sacrifices and the work of the high priest in Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur, I will write a book of a halachot about that. That one day there will be a high priest and he will need to know what to do. He can open my book and he will perform it. Even though in his time there was no high priest and no Beis HaMikdash and he lived in Spain in Cordova. In south of Spain. He said, I will write a book that one day there will be a high priest and he will know what to do because he opens my book. But there was a tremendous change in Jewish thought. People understood that they were used to not have a one book that says that sums up the halacha. They used to know that halacha is a discussion. And when I say that, I want us to live this meeting before we're going to go to next week with understanding that the evolution of halacha is not necessarily was a positive thing. Because until the Rambam, and what he did was tremendous, but until the Rambam, halacha was a discussion. Halacha was not black and white. Halacha wasn't a mitzvah. Halacha was something that is gray. And you have a question what to do, you discuss it with your rabbi, you tell him, you talk about him, he hears you, he hears your problem, and then he finds you the solution. But writing down a book that everyone can open and understand, this is yes, this is no, shaped halacha totally differently. And it moved all the way from being this discussion, this something that is flexible, all the way to being almost like a mitzvah. Something that is yes or no. This is halacha, this is not halacha. This is how you should observe Shabbos, this is how you should not observe Shabbos. This is what you should do in Sukkot, this is what you should not do in Sukkot. This is how you wake up in the morning, this is not. Until the fact that the Shulchan Aruch says that how a person should tie up his shoes when he wakes up in the morning. All right? We need to understand that the halacha went from being a discussion between two people until they understand what they should do, all the way until being a list of laws that are in every and each part of our life, saying what someone should do, how should do it, until we were very much controlled by what halacha is. Now, it's very good. It has a lot of positive issues. But I want us to also understand, before we dive into this series, that this concept of halacha, as we know today, of what is the halacha, it's black or white, this is not the original halacha. It's only what happened when the Rambam decided, I want to sit down and sum up and conclude all the halachot that were there, that we started to limit ourselves into what is yes and what is no, and there was not enough place of discussion, not enough place of understanding and giving the personal aspects into the psikat halacha, into the decision of what the halacha is. And it got worse with time. It got worse with time all the way until today. You can hear, and we'll talk about it at the end of the series, when someone wants to change the halacha, for example, the answers that he receives is, halacha doesn't change. No, halacha changes. Halacha comes from the Hebrew word of halicha. Movement, process. Halacha was not a list of bullets that someone needed to know to tick so he will know he was a righteous person. Someone can observe all the halachot that are in the Shulchan Aruch. But he cannot, but even though he will do all and every each halacha, he still doesn't necessarily going to be righteous. He still doesn't necessarily going to be tzaddik. And we need to understand that halacha happened, something happened to it, and it became something very shrinked, very structured, and less discussed, less open. And I'll try to explain what happened to this halacha. What are the positives? I don't want you to make us very depressed about why is this halacha, why we're Jews. No, there's a lot of good and positive, more positive stuff than negative. But we need to understand that the shape of halacha and Jewish law has changed tremendously during this period of golden age of the Spanish Jewry. And all the way until today, there are actually bullets of what a Jew should do and what he should not do. And you can send a text message to your rabbi and ask him what is the halacha? And he will respond with a quote from the Shulchan Aruch, and that's all the halacha. My motivation in this mini-series, not only to explore and open in front of all of us and learn together what halacha is, but also to try to retrieve a little bit of what halacha originally was. Not only what halacha is today. So yes, in this series, we will talk about issues that are necessarily not what we're used to. We'll talk about women and halacha, for example. How come we did that get along? What should we do? Feminists are everywhere. Women can be prime ministers and judges. Can they be rabbis? Why was halacha very much old dated in what happened in the modern world? Maybe the modern world is wrong and the halacha is right. And we should say, okay, if there is a disagreement or a contrary between the dispute between the modern world and the modern values that we live in, and we have the halacha, maybe the halacha should be the one that is right and the modern world is wrong. Maybe. That's one answer that is a very much possible answer. We'll try to get into it, but through a discussion, not through a bullet and a list of halachot, which I think personally has shrinked what halacha was into being a little bit more like a mitzvah and less like the discussion that was before the process, before it became this book of lists. Thank you very, very much. I'm here for questions.